I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about an issue that tears at the heart and vexes the soul. We're going to discuss the toll the tragedy of youth violence takes on the community. My guests are Darris Ross, founder of the Ross Foundation, and a community organizer with IndyCan; Tony Lamont, director of Youth Media Institute; and Major Lorenzo Lewis, director of youth programs for the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the toll of youth violence in Indianapolis today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Darris Ross. He is the founder of the Ross Foundation and is a community organizer with IndyCan; Tony Lamont, who is director of Youth Media Institute; and Major Lorenzo Lewis, who is commander of IMPD's Community Engagement Office. Sorry, I couldn't read my own handwriting there. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It's good to have you here. This is one of those subjects that really tears at people because there are never any good outcomes from this. So I think I'd like to start first by asking, so that we've all got some skin in the game and we encourage the kind of candid conversation that leads to this, how the reality that young people in our community are doing great damage to each other, often killing each other, how that affects you personally. And I'll start with Darris on that one.
Man, it affects me personally a lot because me being 27 years of age, being more connected to the younger ages, the kids who's killing each other, me knowing their parents and knowing who they are and what they're going through every day, has a personal impact on my life, because it's a war zone going out there, and until we address the grassroots, the root problems of what's going on in our community, it's going to continue to happen. I done lost 30 friends to murder since I was a child, all the way up to the age 21, and 15 of them were shot by guns. When I look back at it, they didn't have enough outlets. They didn't have enough opportunities or people involved in their life to address some of their issues, like mental health. Living in poverty, not finding livable wage jobs, So when we talk about some of these youth violence going on in our community, we have to talk about some of the root problems that's leading to that.
Major Lewis.
Yeah, it affects me personally because I grew up in the inner city, and I like the age difference here because we get different perspectives. I'm actually 57. And I grew up in inner city. I went to IPS schools, and I grew up with a lot of guys and family members who went the wrong way. Mm. And I could have easily done that. However, I just took advantages of what opportunities I had, and so did many other of my other peers did the same thing. So having said that, Darris is right. It's just disturbing to me because even more now today, there are more opportunities out there for youth. And it just saddens me to see that they don't take advantage of those opportunities. Now, a lot of that isn't their fault. We fail them in that way that I think as parents and uncles and grandparents and teachers, not just teachers, but professionals, all of us have failed our youth in that, you know, we have to be the bridge to fill those gaps and point them in the right direction, point them to those resources that are available to them. And they're out there. And you know, no matter what your circumstance is, there's educational opportunities out there that'll pull you out of your circumstance. You just have to have the will. And sometimes we just can't give you the will, but we can coach you up to it if you allow us to. And you have to be open to that. Just so many kids, you see them, they just like they have no hope at such young ages. And it's disturbing to believe that, you know, and you know, it's like, you know, Darius alluded to, a lot of it is the trauma that they experience in their lives. You know, these kids are seeing too much, you know, now, you know, they're hearing gunshots. That's trauma. They're watching their people who are supposed to care about them use drugs. You know, that's a trauma. And so we expect for them to go to school and listen, pay attention. And so, you know, I don't want to take up all the time, but I can talk on and on.
Well, we've got an hour, and we're gonna dive into this. Although I can say already, I could have done without Darius mentioning that he's 27 years old. I hate to tell you this, Darius, but I've got genes that are older than you are, Tony.
It's kind of frightening to me, and the reason I say that is because. When you take a look at from a demographic standpoint and the research that shows that the younger generation is one of those generations now that are coming up that very possibly will not reach the age that their parents do. And it's because of what's going on throughout the community and also from a socioeconomic standpoint, that poverty and as the major mentioned, dealing with the trauma. I mean, trauma-informed care and those things are essential to what's happening. But we also have to take a look at what it really says to what's happening to society. When you have this kind of violence going on, it means that there is a sense of hopelessness. There's a sense of really you don't have an opportunity to do the things that you should have at a young age. And when you have young people that don't think that they have an opportunity to live, they just will survive. And survival means that you'll do whatever you can to survive. And it doesn't matter who you hurt. And that speaks volumes to the mindset of young people that have that way of thinking. I'll do anything to you, about you, just to make sure that I'm able to live. I think the scariest thing about this thing is when you talk to some young people, they don't expect to make it to 30. A lot of them don't expect to make it to 25. And that's really frightening to me.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the toll youth violence takes on the community here in Indianapolis. And by community, we really mean the people who live here. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Tony, a phrase that Darius used said, it's a war zone out there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear anybody contradict that. everyone made reference to the fact that there are places where gunshots are a regular occurrence, in this community where violence is a regular occurrence. How did we get to that point? Because I don't think we can solve the problem until we begin identifying causes here. How do we get to the point that it was a war zone? Don't worry, I'm going to give everybody a crack at that one because that's a big question. It's an essential part of this.
I think from the standpoint of getting there are a lot of things that got us there. Lack of education, lack of resources and support. Lack of mentoring. There are so many things that are part of that. When you're a young person that has to fend for themselves in some instances, you hear some people, young people talk about what they have to do every day, and they go through things that adults go through at 10, 11, 12 years old. They shouldn't have to do that. Anytime a child is afraid to go out and play, or the parents say, don't go out and play, that does something to you. So we got there by allowing young people to not be children anymore and putting expectations on them. And just because society has taken away some of those things that allowed them to be kids. So now here they are trying to survive. And it's a lot bigger than I can give you so many different categories, but it's all of them and then some.
Mm-hmm. Darius.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Tony on the lack of education, the lack of activities. You know, when we're talking about our youth, when I talk to them, they want to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be in a safe environment where they could come together with their friends, their family, and have an enjoyable moment. You look at the city of Indianapolis, there's not too many things for them to do, like far as come together, and it's affordable. Like back then, you know, I had the Karen place growing up. We had the East Side rink, skater rink to go to. But, you know, and then we had little outlets to have fun and party, whatever. We had Discovery Zone and all these different places to go. But now, you look at it now, it's not too many of those opportunities for them to go. And when they do get together, it's the West Side coming together, the East Side coming together, South Side coming together at that one party, and it's escalating into a confrontation or some type of beef.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you talk about the violence that's happening in these malls, right? Because they don't have nowhere else to go. And when you go downtown to the Circus Center Mall, you know, that's the only thing the only place they could go to have fun,
mm-hmm.
To enjoy their time, to socialize with their friends and get away from their parents.
Major Lewis, how do we get to this point?
Yeah, I just sitting here reflecting and I'm thinking, you know, whatever happened to personal accountability? Whatever happened to, reinforcing, you know, that value that you're accountable for your own actions? Now, I know that's it sounds like a heavy burden that we put on a kid, but I remember I'm thinking back when we were kids, we were held accountable for our own actions. And then also the fact that a village, you know, it took a village to raise a kid. So if I did something wrong in school, then, you know, my teacher had carte blanche to discipline me in school, you know, right where it happened. And I dare not go home and complain because I had more punishment.
Yeah, that'd be a second pattern.
I was held accountable there, too.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, you know, parents aren't perfect. You know, mine weren't perfect. I'm not perfect as a parent. And not everybody has two parents in a household. There are many people who've been raised in single family households who are doing better than people who have raised in two parent households. So, you know, there are a lot of dynamics here. And, you know, we often, you know, at some point, sometimes we hold the kids accountable for, things we should hold parents accountable for. For example, you know, making sure your kid goes to school and gets an education instead of going to party. And I just give you an example real quick as a police officer. I remember I was in my office late at night at the district and a gentleman came in, looked like he was ready to go out to the club, but he's wanting to report his 14-year-old's a runaway. So I said, look, son, when we find him, we're going to bring him back to you. Well, he was like, well, you know, why don't y'all keep him? So, you know, and he seemed like a parent of means, you know, and so, you know, that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so accountability, even, you know, kids being held accountable and parents being held accountable. That's what we've lost.
Yeah, Darius.
One thing I want to also mention is another thing that's leading towards this is kids are growing up without fathers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of young single black mothers going on in our poverty neighborhoods. And when you look at who's the residence is, it's a lot of young black mothers. And a lot of the black fathers are not in the household to help provide that wrapped around services. What we're talking about, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, that, if that father's not in the household, it you know, that child looks for somebody to fill that void.
We are talking about the toll youth violence takes on our community and the people who live in it. My guests are Darris Ross, founder of the Ross Foundation and a community organizer with IndyCan, Tony Lamont, who is director of Youth Media Institute, and Major Lorenzo Lewis, who is with the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about the toll of youth violence on our community, the people who live in it. My guests are Darris Ross. He is the founder of the Ross Foundation and a community organizer with IndyCan, Tony Lamont, who is director of Youth Media Institute, and Major Lorenzo Lewis, who is commander of IMPD's Community Engagement Office. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I want to ask a question. I'm going to set this up a little bit. How much of, it's in some ways unavoidable to talk about this issue without talking about the role that race plays in our community and in America. There's no other way to get around it. And I'll tell a little bit of a story as a backdrop to that. When I was a newspaper reporter many years ago, probably around the time that Darris was born, I did a prolonged series of stories at Sugar Grove Elementary, which is at 21st and Sugar Grove, and was a school where there were a lot of at-risk kids, probably still are. I haven't been back to the school in years. But I remember in talking with the students there and all of that, they talked even then about the fact that, you know, they could hear gunshots when they were sleeping at night. In fact, one of the details that I put in the story is that if you walked by one of the windows in one of the classrooms, there was a breeze blowing through it because there were bullet holes in the glass. And I got several calls, but one very, very angry, clearly, like myself, Caucasian gentleman, who insisted that that just couldn't be possible, that nowhere here in this community was, and I even said to him, look, you want to come meet me at the school? I'll show you where the bullet holes are. And he refused to come. So I guess what I'm saying, trying to set this up and say, is how much of this problem is also compounded by the fact that significant parts of our community are in denial about the fact that it is even happening, that they won't confront the facts that it is happening. I think I've given everybody but Major Lewis the first word so far, so I'm going to throw it to Major Lewis first.
Okay. I think a lot of it goes back to privilege. Mm-hmm. And, there are a lot of people who have privileges that others don't have. And so specifically, African Americans tend to not have the same privileges that white Americans or European, persuasions don't have. And so if it doesn't affect me,
Or anyone who looks like me.
Or anybody who looks like me or anybody I care about.
Yeah.
then it's not really, it's not my problem, you know? And, you know, and so, and then it also goes, you know, I mean, there's racism and there's racism in society. It's still, you know, still alive and well. But again, it goes back to, if it doesn't affect me, I mean, just like, I mean, if you go back to the civil rights movement, there are a lot of people who didn't like white people who didn't like what was going on, but they didn't act on it because it didn't necessarily affect them. And so media played a big role in that. So once people really saw how bad it really was, and they thought, well, this is wrong. So you saw people who wouldn't normally say anything say something. And actually, you know,
seeing the police dogs and the fire hoses turn loose.
So even like today, I see, you know, this generation of kids are different. I mean, that you actually see more interaction among the races, and Darius probably could speak more on that. I've been to some of his peace marches, and they're very diverse. So I just think that. You know, and the same mentality that you may have had during slavery time still exists. You know, people aren't, you know, there's that privilege and there's a sense of superiority that people still have. And I don't know if it's necessarily people actually subconsciously believe they're thinking that way.
And I can almost, I've never in all of my years of interviewing people, I've never met a racist who would believe he or she was a racist. they don't acknowledge it. They don't acknowledge it. Darius.
Yeah, I think it's a big problem in our city, racism is. That's why what Major Lorenzo was talking about with the peace marches, I create a platform where all walks of color can come together to create a platform for our youth. So it'd be white people, white kids, black kids, Latinos. They all come together to our marches, and we have probably like 500 kids coming together for a positive cause. So we can highlight that our black youth are dying or being targeted, you know, and that they matter, you know, that we need to stand up as one community and lead by example, you know. If our, you know, some of the older colleagues can't get it together, you know, we can show how it's done, and we could get our parents involved, and, you know, and it could be a child and parent approach. So I think that has been effective, highly effective with the marches I've been doing, where we do bring the kids together and we highlight what they're doing in the community and showing that we can come together and solve some of these problems concerning our community.
Tony, I'm going to give you the last word.
Well, I'll say that, and I always like to use my youth from my youth media institute at the Indiana Black Expo. They come from various areas in central Indiana, from Fishers to Hamilton Southeastern to Pike High School to Cathedral. But what's amazing to me is that race has a lot to do with everything in the conversation, because it doesn't matter where they live, the conversation is about race. And it's amazing that even in a socioeconomic situation where the families are doing better, they still have to have those conversations. So, you know, if they're having those conversations with the parents are having those conversations with their children, saying, you know, you have to watch out, you have to act a particular way, you can't do this or you can't do that. Make sure. Here's the best way of putting it, the illustration. A lot of black families have to have a conversation about being stopped by the police. That's not something that I don't think any other group does.
That's not something
I have to
lecture my teenage son about, no.
So race, that means race.
Yeah.
That's because of the conditions that we go through now. They're great police officers. The major's a great one. I've known him for years. So he's one of the great examples. But you shouldn't have to have a conversation about how to act when a public service person stops you. But you have to have it because of the fear and of the conditions that you've been put through. And Darius was mentioning earlier, we talked about parenting and not having. I grew up in a single parent household. Mother was a single parent. She raised me. But here I think is the difference. And this really speaks to race. Mm-hmm. We're not communities anymore. Mm-hmm. We talked about the village. Well, mm-hmm. most folks don't know who lives above them or underneath them, beside them, don't know their neighbors. They don't communicate mm-hmm. because they're staying out of one another's business. That's a major problem. So we don't have communities anymore. We just have transient folk moving from place to place. And if you've been there for a while, you're not feeling safe because you don't know who's living next to you. So you don't have those conversations. And, you know, race is a big, big deal.
We're talking about the toll of youth violence and that it takes on the people who live here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at @NoLimitsWFYI, or you can find us on Facebook at @NoLimitsWFYI, or you can do what a listener named Jim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Brendan, you're on the line.
Calling from Indianapolis, in such a polarizing environment as this administration has been, my question is concerning youth, either violence or drug use or habits that come of that. What is the best approach? Is it harsher initial punishments, which historically speaking doesn't seem to be the case, or is it community outreach? And if so, what specific things can people in neighborhoods and communities do? And good. I'll take my answer out there.
Thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. So I'll tell you what, Tony, I give you the last word on the last one. I'll give you first word on this one.
Well, it's amazing that he said that because that's one of the conditions when you talk about race. Yeah, harsher conditions, same crime. We're seeing it now. Social media is so prevalent. You see issues and situations where you'll have an individual. I think the example I'll use is in one of the states they were doing an example of open carry. Mm-hmm. White, black. White guy carries his weapon, walking down the street. The police officer asks him why he's carrying his weapon, ask him for identification. Not a big deal. They have a conversation. Black guy does exactly the same thing. He pulls his gun out on him. He draws down on him, tells him to get on the ground, and treats him as though he's a criminal, even though he has the same rights as the white guy that was stopped. So different treatment because of the color of the skin. So that affects each and every day and each and everything that someone goes through. And we're seeing right now, I think, what's going on with drugs in our community. It's being looked at a little bit different because when there were drugs in the black community, when you were talking about, it wasn't a lot of treatment. Now you're talking about a person getting stopped on the street who's dealing with prescription drugs or taking those drugs. Now they want to take them to treatment, whereas the other individuals were arrested, taken to jail, and prosecuted. Now they're talking about treatment, and it's all because of race.
And I'm going to redirect this ever so slightly because I want to get us keep us on focus here. And I also see we're getting some questions via Facebook and all of this about responses to the Aaron Bailey situation. Primarily, I want to talk today about youth violence and community. And I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that the ultimate decision here was the special prosecutors. He's not in the room right now. So I don't think there's anybody really who can speak to that. I'd rather have us talk about the things that we're likely to have some influence over today, if possible. But in terms of this, I think the one place where this seems to connect, and I think before I toss this to Major Lewis, we have a sound bite from Chief Roach speaking about really the attempt to re-engage, to reduce the number of guns in the community and all of that. But he's making a larger point here that I'd like for us to pay attention to. This is IMPD Chief Brian Roach.
Important that I be here, let people know that they can be open and frank with me, and I'll do everything I can to fix those issues. But if you don't know about them or you don't listen, you can't do anything about it.
That was IMPD Chief Brian Roach talking about really the attempt. And Major Lewis, I'll let you speak to the program of trying to reduce the number of guns that are floating around in the community. But I also want to talk about his larger point that we seem to spend a lot of time in this community shouting back and forth past each other rather than listening to each other.
Absolutely. The Chiefs has made it very clear to us throughout the department that emphasis on reducing non-fatal shootings. Because as we know, the non-fatal shootings are just a couple of inches away from being an inch or even less away from being a homicide. And that goes to speak in terms of just the number of guns that are available. You know, most of our homicides are handgun related, you know. So it's just common sense. We can reduce the number of guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. You know, we're not anti-gun. We're just anti the wrong person with a weapon and incapable of making the right decisions or the good decisions while carrying a handgun. So you're looking at a youth who's, we're talking about youths with guns, their brains aren't fully developed until they're 25 years old. So we can't expect them to make a good decision while armed with a gun. So I think also what the chief is saying here is that, so if we can reduce the number of guns, they're in the wrong hands, because there are a lot of things we can't control. The mental health issues that people, you know, someone with a gun is suffering from mental health. Of course, if they aren't taking the proper medication, they probably won't make the right decision. And then also what the chief is speaking on this is that we do take complaints seriously, and we as a department, we will investigate complaints because we know there are, you know, officers, where do we get them from? The human race, right? The human race isn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we do have a disciplinary process within our department, and discipline starts from the day you're hired. And our rules and regulations and general orders are the guidelines in which we operate within. So what he's saying here is that, you know, if he knows what the concerns are, then he can address those concerns.
Darris, that larger point, I think, about us being able to listen to each other in order to try to resolve some of these problems. How do we get to the point? Because it does seem often these conversations assume a pattern where there's a lot of people talking and very few people seem to be listening.
Trust.
Yeah.
You know, it's a relational piece. If we talk about police and community relations, if we talk about rebuilding and revitalizing our community, we have to start with trust and reinstoring that trust in our communities, especially with the Aaron Bailey case going on, with, you know, how that was handled. How do you think that that trust corresponds to the black community? You know, if you're conducting sweeps in high crime areas or targeted areas, you know, how do you think that trust would be built from that? You know, instead of trying to worry about why they disciplining them for carrying a gun, just figure out why they're carrying a gun. You know, so that's my point on that.
We're talking about the toll youth violence takes on Indianapolis and the people who live in it. My guests are Darris Ross. He is the founder of the Ross Foundation and is a community organizer with IndyCan. Tony Lamont, who is director of Youth Media Institute. And Major Lorenzo Lewis, who is commander of IMPD's Community Engagement Office. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the toll youth violence takes on Indianapolis and the people who live in it. My guests are Darris Ross. He is founder of the Ross Foundation and is a community organizer with IndyCan. Tony Lamont, who is director of Youth Media Institute, and Major Lorenzo Lewis, who is commander of IMPD's Community Engagement Office. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, certainly. What's on your mind?
I'm a middle school teacher in Indianapolis in the IPS, and I'm also a foster parent. And this is my 21st year as an educator, and I've never seen the disruption like we have in our school in all the places that I've been. And I feel that one of the major faults of our society is that we've gone so nuclear that no one has support. And it's assumed that when a parent has a child, she or he, that they know what to do as a parent. And without any supports in our community for people to have the skills, especially if they weren't raised in a way that gives them the skills for conflict management, for everything down to dietary needs and everything. I think what's happening is our kids are growing up in a great deal of instability. And if we can just help one another out more and have services that are built in place that work for working parents who have maybe two jobs, I think we might be able to get out of this hole that we as a society have dug ourselves into. But the instability with the children and the lack of, I'd say the lack of respect or the interpersonal skills, it's such a huge deficit right now. And even with, I happen to be a Caucasian woman, but even with the African-American individuals that I work with who are maybe in their 60s, they say they've never in their professional lives seen children act the way they do currently. And I think that's just the disruption in the children's lives.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that story. Daris.
Yes. I think one of the things we need to talk about is the resources and services that's wrapped around them. It's a lot of blockage in resources and services. I know Major Lewis was saying it's a lot of resources and services out there, but are they really getting to the right people? You know, and we're talking about organizations who's traditional organizations who continue to get the same resources and services, but not doing the grassroots work. Going inside these urban communities and going inside the trenches and working with those children who really needs those resources and services so they can be effective. You know, we talking about wrapped around services. We're talking about providing counselors and guidance and instructing them and teaching them behavioral, you know, because we're dealing with mental health. So that's one thing we have to address, because you never know what that child's going through that day, you know, what trauma he has faced that week or she has faced that at that moment. You know, we need to have those people in place to tap into that.
How much of this, and we've had, you know, former chief and public safety director, Chief Troy Riggs on here, and he's talked about, you know, attempting to do, for lack of a better term, holistic interventions in some of the troubled communities where you start looking at the kinds of things, frankly, that I hear everybody talking about, creating alternatives for young people to do things and make healthier choices and all of that. That's come back again. I've already made reference to the fact that I'm somewhat older than Daris is here. You know, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is how much of this is also a product of the fact that there is kind of a yo-yo effect here, that because I've heard that sort of approach, you know, whether they call it community policing or, you know, full service school systems or all of that. And it starts and then there's a change in leadership or a change in direction. And it stops, and we go with perhaps the other response that one of the callers made, that we go to a more draconian response to this and just say we're going to punish people on our way out of this. And then we realize that's not working, so we go back to trying the interventions, the holistic. Daris, I can tell you want to jump in on this. You're about to leap into the microphone.
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to say is we need to stop increasing the officers every year. From my perspective, it doesn't have a direct link to reducing the murder rate. versus you could take some of those funding and like the $13 million increase they just gave them in the city budget this year. Mm-hmm. You could use that to provide to help provide around mental health facilities, more services and resources for the urban community, something that's more effective that will work and tackle the root problems of what's going on in our communities. You know, so that's one thing I wanted to say.
What would help, Tony? I can tell you want to leap in, too.
Well, the one thing that when the educator called a little while ago, the one thing that I thought was one of the challenges that educators are running into that they've never had to run into before at such a larger number is they're facing children that are coming to school. They haven't had a meal mm-hmm. in 24 hours. They're trying to figure out where, you know, their next meal's coming from. If you look at some of the public school systems across the country, I know mm-hmm. IPS has done this, where they fed children. So they have a food program at the beginning, and mm-hmm. and then they, over the break months, they did that. Because how are you going to learn if you're hungry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have an attitude.
Particularly if you're 6 or 7 years old
right.
or whatever. Yeah.
If you're 11 or 12 years old, I mean, yeah. the same kinds of things are going on. We've got young people that are living in food deserts.
Yeah.
I mean, the key phrase right now is trauma-informed care, which covers a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more of it because we're dealing with young people that are dealing with trauma throughout their lives, whether their father or their mother is in their lives, whether they've seen someone die, whether they're, from an educational standpoint, getting what they need. They're dealing with trauma throughout their life. And when that trauma goes on over and over and over again, it's very hard to teach someone that's dealing with a social and mental illness. And a lot of folks don't want to admit, but, you know, stress becomes a more serious mental illness mm-hmm. when it goes on and on and on. And every day, a lot of these young people are dealing with stresses that we just take for granted as adults because we know how to face it. They don't.
Yeah, I know that when we did our show on Tuesday and we're talking about a similar subject, I think the toll that what they call adverse childhood experiences. It's got the absolute worst acronym, I think, on the planet. They call these things ACEs, mm-hmm. which, you know, an ACE normally is something that yeah, wins, right. and this is not a winner for you. And the effect that they have and continue to have. I guess, Major Lewis, the way I'd want to reframe this, too, is, you know, what I hear Darris and to some degree Tony saying is that we really need to reallocate some of our community resources here, and that this shouldn't be exclusively a policing problem, that it should be a community response problem.
That's actually exactly what my response is. Just real quick, I think increased funding in law enforcement for me should be more focused on not necessarily how many people are killed or anything like that, but the increase in the population of Indianapolis. I mean, I think there's been an 80,000 increase over mm-hmm. the years here. So we have to respond to that, not necessarily for the negative stuff, but for the positive, so that we're able to respond to calls for service. But I understand where he's going. I understand mm-hmm. where he's going. I think the mayor just gave allocated a few hundred thousand dollars to several youth organizations. I think when we go back to community, we have to work as a community. So stick a pin in the fact that some organizations are getting allocated thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to work with youth and in the community. So understanding that we have to work as a community. So I consider the community the schools, police department, city, county agencies, grassroots groups like the Ross Foundation. There are other groups out there like Stop the Violence that are all doing good things. I wouldn't support it if I didn't think he was doing great things, and he knows how I feel about him. But we all have to work together instead of everybody's working on an island. And you can go to any school, and any teacher can tell you who the police are going to have to deal with in 10, 15 years. So that's why a lot of our efforts in the community engagement office are geared for what's going on in the school. We try to support the school. There's a program that we've partnered with the Indians. We did in this year about four schools, and mm-hmm. it's called Right Fit. And I'm not here to, you know, mm-hmm. promote a program, but just give you an example of where IPS, law enforcement, public safety, and other public safety agencies have come together to provide support in the schools to address the underlying causes, such as hunger. So the kid, it's an after-school program. The kids get fed to get a transportation mm-hmm. home. They get positive interaction with public safety. And they get to exercise, and they learn things about nutrition. And so that's a step in that direction.
We've got calls, emails, Facebook messages backed up. So I'm going to ask our listeners to be quick when we get them. I'm also going to ask my guests to be quick, too, so we can give as many people a chance as possible. This is from Danny, who connected with us via Facebook. And you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. It says, have you seen a rise in youth crime and violence now that it is becoming the norm for households to require 3+ jobs in order to keep finances afloat? Does the fact that parents are statistically spending less time in the home and more time working have an impact on the likelihood that kids from those aforementioned households will find themselves in compromising situations? Tony.
I'll just say yes. That's easy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's mm-hmm. an easy one.
Absolutely.
That's
easy.
There's
yeah,
an
absolutely.
So income yeah. inequality plays a role in this
absolutely.
Too.
But not equality. I mean, the problem is
inequality. I say.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But we've been asking as a culture for equality, and it's about equity now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the catchphrase, but it's really the truth. We're not getting equity, and so if you want that to happen, that's what has to happen.
We're talking about the toll youth violence takes on our community here on No Limits. Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I live in downtown Indianapolis, and I'm a transplant. I've only been here about 7 years. I grew up in New England and California, and it was just shocking coming to, I mean, I've never lived in the Deep South, but one of the most racially segregated cities I've ever lived in. And as I delve into the history, part of my job is going into people's homes all over the city and in the suburbs and outlying counties. And what's amazing to me is people don't understand the history of how the city became segregated the way it is, and they're convinced that they do know the history of how it became the way it is. And as I learn more and more, the more passionate I've become about being part of my neighborhood and getting involved in the kids in the streets, lives and schools and stuff like that. That's a lot of work, but I feel like that's, as they were saying, those relationships are kind of where it begins. There's no one thing this is going to fix it all. But you can't help the kid across the street or the neighbor next to you, help them. And I think if we get enough people with that mindset, we begin to see change little by little.
Okay, Joel, I want to give Darius a chance to respond to that. Darius, in some ways that seems to speak, thanks very much for the call, Joel, to what you've been saying, that you start by brightening the corner where you are.
Yes, it takes a village, like Major Lewis was saying. I think that in order to move as a community, we have to work together as a community. We have to stop being isolated from each other, and we live right next door to each other. You know, if you see something going on in your community or a concern as a community, y'all need to come together. We need to come together and advocate for change and then stick together with that cause.
We're talking about the toll that community violence takes on youth violence takes on our community here in Indianapolis. Dee, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Certainly.
I find it curious that your panel today is an all-male panel. I wish that you would have had a female perspective, and I will tell you why. Mm-hmm. I worked for over 40 years in human services. And I spent a lot of time in minority neighborhoods. I am Caucasian, but I helped more than my share of women who were strong Black and Hispanic women who kept especially their sons in line. They knew better, even if mom was working a couple of jobs. That woman was able to manage her household, and I'll take any comments or answer offline.
Yeah,
thank you.
Dee, actually, before you go, what I would say in part, because we invited the guests, so you can't hold them accountable for our actions. And in this case, I guess what I would say is I always encourage people to think of this program not as a single event, but an ongoing conversation. This is not the last time we're going to talk about this subject. And I'll guarantee you there will be other voices at the table in the future, have been in the past. Thank you very much for
calling. I will look forward to that in the future then. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Certainly. So, Tony, fair point?
Yes and no. And, okay. And I totally understand what she's saying.
Okay.
Absolutely. As I said, single-parent household, mom, work two jobs, 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. I got it. I feared mom. Children don't have to fear their parents anymore because the parents' hands have been tied. The rules have changed. The game has changed. So now young people don't have the same respect because the parents can't do the things they used to do. And that's been proven. So when you turn a household away from the opportunity to parent, you've changed how the child will be raised. And that's what's gone on. That's the difference that's happened.
What do you mean when they're not allowed to parent anymore?
Okay, first of all, my mother used to be able to whoop me.
Yeah.
You know, they used to have corporal punishment in schools. Now they move away from that. They teach the young people to report their parents disciplining them in a physical way in school. Mm-hmm. So when you tell a child to be their own police in their own household, you've given the child power over the parent parenting, and it changes the dynamic of how you can raise that child. Because now, I mean, of course, my mother would say, okay, you can get to the phone if you want to, but I don't know how you're going to make it. And mm-hmm. But I feared that. That's changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, although, correct me if I'm wrong, Major Lewis, corporal punishment itself is not outlawed. It's when it's excessive that
exactly.
It is outlawed.
It's abuse, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When it gets to an abusive...
Fine by statute.
Yeah, yeah. So it has to be pretty extreme before it rises to that level.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we're coming close on time here, and I guess if we could, with just maybe 5 seconds, is there a single constructive step? And I'll tell you what, I think I'm going to let youth be served here.
Okay.
I'll let Darris take us out. How do we get... How do we move forward from here?
Yeah. So one thing we did was we met with Chief Roach last Tuesday about action of violence reduction plan, kind of like the IVRP
yes.
That was years ago, which cut the murder rate almost in half, almost. So we want to try to reinvent that wheel where it's getting to the root problems, addressing the issues going on in the community, providing mental health help wrapped around services as far as, you know, being living in poverty, financial assistance, also having those violence interrupters in place too. So not just if the police is not connected to the community to talk.
That'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests and our listeners for a great program. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's Public Broadcasting Stations.